This is a CNA podcast.
It seems like a lifetime ago when the very first COVID-19 vaccine in Singapore was given to a nurse on December 30th, 2020. But fast forward to today, almost 9 months later, more than 80% of people here have been fully vaccinated. Worldwide, nearly 6 billion shots have been given. And the spotlight is now shining on whether that's just the first tranche of the vaccine, with more needed. The first booster shots have gone out to those above 60 who took their second dose more than 6 months ago here. And outside of Singapore, the UK, Israel and France have already done so, with the US and Germany planning to. Yet scientists are disagreeing as to whether booster shots are really necessary, with some saying the data isn't clear. Is it a different calculation when it comes to booster shots? Are they really necessary? How conclusive are the studies? Why do experts disagree about its use and efficacy? And do these mixed messages simply mean that it might be better to wait? Or will this create uncertainty and slow down booster shot uptake? It's Wednesday, September 22nd, and you're listening to Heart of the Matter. Now with me to cut through the chase are Dr. Leong Ho Nam, infectious disease specialist at Mount Elizabeth Novena Hospital.
Hi everyone, glad to be here.
And Dr. Su Li Yang, Vice Dean of Global Health at the NUS Saw Swee Hock School of Public Health.
Hello, thanks for the opportunity to be here.
So I just want to start off with this example that comes up all the time, this case study whenever people think about vaccination rates in Singapore. Israel. You have 9 million people, highly vaccinated population, but hit by the Delta variant, and there are pretty scary statistics about hospitalization and more. The question then is, Israel has started a campaign to roll out boosters in end of July, and they say this has stemmed the tide. It's worked. Is Israel not a good case for Singapore to work off? What's so different about Israel and Singapore? What do you think, Ho Nam?
Yes and no. Israel literally led the pack in terms of vaccination. They really hit a very good target. But you realize that they leveled off at about 60 to 65%. And thereafter, they couldn't get the figures better. What it means is that they really have a big group that's resistant to vaccines. Number two, we also must understand the population. A lot of them are young, which are not suitable for vaccination as well. You can't really compare with Singapore, even though we have hit 80% and give or take another 10% for the kids. We still have 10% who are rather resistant. So it's not exactly apples to apples comparison. But nonetheless, it is a good effort. Now, they had their vaccines very, very early. And in turn, the antibodies waned with time. They practically completed most of the vaccinations by the middle of the year. And when the Delta strain hit, we're talking about many people who have had their vaccinations more than 3 to even 6 months ago. Antibodies wane, and what the body kind of forgets a little bit, and in turn, they end up having more cases. But the point I want to stress to you, which is, get vaccinations because the antibodies will wane. But the ones who are really getting hospitalized are those which have not been vaccinated. Those who have been vaccinated still do very, very well. The majority do not get hospitalized or need hospitalization.
Your quick take, Li Yang, about Israel being a case study for us?
I agree with Ho Nam. I think Israel is one of the countries that we look at to see what's going to happen in the future, because UK, US, Denmark, Singapore is not exactly like them, but Singapore is not completely different from them as well. But for your question about booster doses, they're not meant to protect the unvaccinated. They are meant to protect those who are already vaccinated and whose immune systems may be waning in terms of protection against COVID-19.
So then looking at the US Food and Drug Administration panel voted to recommend that the FDA authorize a booster shot for those 65 and older and anyone at risk of severe illness. And yet they voted against a much broader rollout. Breakdown for our listeners, what about these two groups makes a booster beneficial?
We are looking at those whose immune systems are not working as well as the young and healthy, or for those for whom even a mild case of COVID-19 may tip them over, requiring hospitalization or ICU care. In these cases, I think it is advisable to consider giving them boosters. But for the rest, it is best to wait and see. Don't get me wrong. I think eventually everyone will need a booster dose. It's
Why?
Just when that's going to happen.
I'm going to cut a little bit finer for you. FDA says 65 years old and above, we're calling it 60. Now, the age is a little bit arbitrary because you can't find people whose immunity is terrible. Diabetic with poor renal failure who's 59 years old, and he is clearly someone who will benefit from a booster. As compared to one who's 68, 69 years old, fit, still does the marathon with no chronic illnesses, doesn't smoke, he may not benefit very much. But from the public health perspective, you just want an easy cutoff. And what the ministry has done is to take 60 years old. So I'm not going to quibble with that. Between 60 and 65 is quite similar. And his point is this, and I agree with him, you need to get those people whose immunity is poorer, and the best catch, easiest way, instead of footing into a certain criteria of having this problem, that problem, is just take an age criteria. So you hit the age, you do it. And of course, Ministry of Health took a lower cut of 60 years old, which I'm perfectly comfortable with. It is a good move, easy to administer, easy to roll out, and easy to get people vaccinated.
But why not roll out the booster for everybody then? Because we know that the booster offers stronger protection against infections and severe disease and death. So why not broaden it? What are we looking out for? What are we waiting for?
Great question. So the backdrop is everyone in the world vaccinated? The answer is no. Many, many countries are still struggling with vaccination rates of about 20%. Now, if you were to do a booster shot for 60 years old and below, what are you trying to achieve? We're trying to prevent illnesses, or are we trying to prevent hospitalization and deaths? Hospitalization and death prevention is going to be very, very minuscule. Yes, certainly we can prevent illnesses, but what about the cut of having deaths and hospitalization? The need to vaccinate, the number which you need to vaccinate to prevent one death, probably would be many, many cases. In other words, we are not really preventing deaths and hospitalization with the booster vaccine, we're just preventing illnesses. Backdrop, many countries in the world are short of vaccines. These many countries have people who are dying of COVID-19. Looking at it ethically, worldwide, should not then these vaccines go out to these other countries?
Hey, but it's not either or though, because a lot of these vaccines in the US, for example, it's not a choice between exporting them to another country that needs them with low vaccination rates or giving a booster shot to people in their own country in the US.
There is a pressure. If you look at the US, it started donating many of the vaccines out because it knew that many of their own individuals are not going ahead with vaccinations. In fact, they are going ahead with boosters without the need of ordering new vaccines. Now, if you look at the context of Singapore as well, I'm going to look at it a little bit finely. Singapore donated vaccines over to Brunei. Singapore actually traded off our vaccines with Australia.
But we'll come back to that.
And we'll come back to it, yes.
Yeah,
we'll do know that you have vaccines available that's not utilised and you're pushing it out to other countries, which is the right thing. So if we do have excess vaccines, the right neighbourly thing to do is actually give the excess vaccines to the countries around. Now, this is a little bit controversial, but it's just as an observer, this is what we should be thinking about because we don't live individually on this planet. We live together. Only when the slowest nation marches out of COVID-19 is the world safe.
But Liang, break this down for us because a lot of people are concerned that the reason why booster shots are not rolled out more widely is that there are adverse health risks. There could be something that's unknown for a younger population. Is there such adverse reactions? Are there such risks and dangers of doing that prematurely?
I think there will certainly be adverse effects with the booster dose, but these do not seem more than with the first two doses of the vaccine. We are not in a real emergency. It is good to follow the signs.
So, Liang, I just want to press the point a little bit more. But what are the drawbacks and risks of a strategy authorizing boosters more widely to get ahead of the problem of waning protection, which we know will come with the passage of time?
I think it's important to follow the science, which we and several countries have always done. And currently, the science is quite clear that for elderly and for those whose immune systems are compromised, their waning immunity against COVID-19 post-vaccination means that they should get a booster dose of the vaccine, if possible.
More so than younger people?
But for the young and the healthy, the science here is not clear, right? Because we know that they are still protected against severe illness and deaths. We don't know at what point this protection ends, and giving them that booster dose of vaccine may not be as beneficial to them as giving it to the elderly and those whose immune systems are compromised.
It sounds like a lot of information is not clear yet, but just want to pinpoint it a little bit more. Is it the passage of time in that we're waiting for the studies to bear out what the reactions might be and what the effects could be of a booster shot? Or is it time in terms of how much protection wanes after you get your second shot?
I think we're already fairly clear on what the side effects of the booster doses are. Israel has given it to millions of people, and similarly in US and Singapore, we are starting to do the same, right? So we are quite certain that there is no additional or new risk from giving a booster dose of the vaccine. What we are trying to figure out now is how long will the protection against severe illness and deaths last for the initial doses of the vaccine, especially for the young and healthy people. And for that, we haven't really quite seen the signal yet from around the world.
So Honam, just ask you, is it also about risk settings when you think about booster shots? Because for a lot of infectious disease experts like yourself, healthcare practitioners, they come into contact with people that are probably at higher risk of catching it. Would you then say that when we look at booster shots, eventually for a broader population rollout, healthcare should be front and center of this, healthcare practitioners?
I think that's a very good and reasonable question. So I ask my patients two questions when they come in and ask if they need a booster. Number one, are you at risk of getting hospitalization, requiring oxygen, or even death? If the answer is yes, you all the more should get booster. There's also another group of people, which is the one which I struggle with. Can the person afford to fall sick? If you look at the healthcare system now, it is really at the extremes. All of us are being strained. There is a call now that maybe we should just cut down some of our social activities. If the healthcare workers were to fall sick, you actually lose important, crucial people out there, which is holding the hospital services and running them. So can hospital services people afford to fall sick? So the data coming up from Israel is that with a booster shot, even though you're much younger, your risk of getting infection will be lower.
Mm-hmm.
So you can keep the hospital care workers working. And in turn, it is also an extra layer of protection on top of the mask, etc. So with this, would it be beneficial for people who cannot afford to fall sick, like the healthcare workers or the essential workers, in getting a booster shot?
It's sounding to me like it's quite challenging because vaccine science is moving at breakneck speed. Scientists are keeping up and the public is really also trying to get ahead of this curve or at least keep up with this curve. But it's slightly bewildering to a lot of our listeners because when Pfizer in mid-August said there's a case for booster shots because it restores protection. At the same time, recently last week in The Lancet, we've seen viewpoints that have expressed the contrary, that even though there is some evidence for seniors and those immunocompromised taking the shot, there's not really enough evidence for broad booster programs. So there's a lot of noise and it can feel very confusing though. My question is, do you worry about how all this data is presented? And is there a better way for the men on the street to understand all this?
So I'm quite happy you have podcasts like this, where you bring in different experts and hopefully in the future policymakers to try to explain why they do certain things. Because I think, as you say, the science is developing at a breakneck pace. Even those of us who are following closely find it hard to keep up with what's happening around the world. So I think there are trade-offs that have to be made. In our case, we are kind of privileged because we can see other countries who are ahead of us and learn from their experiences before we choose to do something that will affect a significant number of the population.
But do we have the luxury of time?
That's really, really very challenging. And I agree with Professor Su very much that we were in a special situation where we can observe and we have the opportunity of having the vaccinations. Other vaccines, let's say shingles or dengue, there would have been many experts panels, there have many, many discussions before it actually gets filtered down to the public. But this time around, the public gets it firsthand, direct from the publications. It's literally the raw data. And for the same set of raw data, even among five experts, you will have 10 different opinions.
Oh no.
So it really becomes very, very difficult then. And for the layman who doesn't understand the intricacies, and of course, even the nuances of the language that's used, then it becomes even more confusing. But I do like the fact that the public is actually asking questions. And perhaps you become more informed, not just of this vaccine or these illnesses, but subsequently of healthcare in general. But what I do hope is that the public will actually read widely and from credible sources. In addition, I would also want them to actually look at each piece of information and dissect it as what you would do for any piece of information. And that way, make your own informed decision. For even for vaccines such as this, there's no really right and wrong answer. I respect the individual's choices very much, but I would strongly encourage them to be guided by science rather than emotions.
But when you're saying that we should be guided by science, it's really not straightforward for the man on the street trying to grapple with this horde of information. Are you worried that this mixed messaging and influx of information and different points of views from scientists about the efficacy of booster shots and whether it should be rolled out more widely could actually encumber our efforts to that effect really actually happens?
Absolutely. You see, I'm bombarded with messages every day, not only from people who are concerned about the infections and vaccines, as well as people who throw me anti-vaxxers with long videos of 60 minutes and expect me to actually go through them. But what's more important is we should have more discussions like this.
But it's not just the anti-vaxxers. It's also the people who are vaccine hesitant, but have been prodded to take the two first doses of the vaccines. And then now they're looking at the booster shots. If they're someone older, senior,
yes,
they might have second thoughts. I mean, what would you say to them?
I think this is a special situation in a sense that I don't think at any point in our history have we been faced with a pandemic and had the same ease of assessing information as we have now. And that certainly is causing a lot of confusion to many people. And I agree with Dr. Leong that we are all concerned about this. In Singapore, we are blessed because there remains very high public trust in our public institutions and governments, that at least the choices made by the government are those with the people in mind and are aimed to protect as many of the people as possible. And I think we all recognize that. As for how to get past this issue of vaccine hesitancy, all the different bits of information coming to you, I don't have a very good solution for that. As Dr. Leong says, more such conversations will be good, more outreach by the Ministry of Health and other knowledgeable members of the public will also be beneficial.
To the people who are really very, very confused and they, with so much information coming through, I'm going to ask you to look at one group of people from Singapore who truly, truly have your best interest in mind. And that's the Expert Committee on Vaccines for COVID-19. These people are very intelligent, who keep themselves abreast, and they would make recommendations as best as they are. They are apolitical. I can tell you they are serving it with all the best in the heart for the interests of Singapore. And if you're really, really confused by that, go by what the expert committee says. That would really, really be the best thing there is for the individual.
So I just want to turn our attention to some of the things that people have on their minds when they think about booster shots and taking them, especially a lot of the seniors. The first one really is, studies have shown that the level of protection wanes in the months after when it comes to the Pfizer, the Moderna vaccine. So how do we know that the same shot offered now in form of a booster would be effective when another variant comes along? And the question behind that also is, why haven't we seen Pfizer or Moderna? These are mRNA vaccines that can be quite easily altered, be modified and tweaked to address specific variants, especially because we know that the Delta variant is the one of most concern right now.
I think the current vaccines still provide adequate protection against the different variants. We were concerned a little while about the Mu variant, for instance, but that doesn't seem to have spread as much as the Delta variant. For a company to tweak and develop a vaccine against a variant, especially for mRNA, that's relatively simple. But the question is that necessary at this point in time? And will that confuse matters with multiple different variant-type vaccines at this point?
Right, and you need to jump through regulatory hoops again.
That's right, yeah. I think we'll reach the situation that we have with influenza, meaning that every year we may have to have an adapted vaccine that will cover the major circulating variants.
Oh, you're going to go there already, okay.
I said we may get to this point, but certainly that would probably be almost like a worst-case scenario for us.
I'm going to jump in and say that Perhaps we may actually have found a way to solve the problem of variance, and it comes in Professor Wang Linfa's paper. Okay, so a bias, I'm a good friend of Professor Wang Linfa, and he actually did a very beautiful paper where it showed that people who actually had SARS in 2003 who had a vaccine, the Pfizer vaccine or Moderna vaccine, and subsequently they developed antibodies that could actually treat all variants now and possibly and of the future as well. That's amazing because it really tells you that the way to solve the variant problem is to look in the past. The way to the future is in the past with the SARS 2003. The mRNA manufacturers and all the other vaccine manufacturers are looking at developing a SARS 2003 vaccine. You see, if you have been vaccinated with the COVID-19 vaccine, and then you are vaccinated with a SARS 2003 vaccine, based on the paper which Professor Wang Linfa has done, you would technically be able to cope with not only the alpha, beta, gamma, delta strains, you will also be able to deal with the mu or subsequent strains that come along. So that perhaps is a panacea for us, but every single thing we've predicted to date, we've been wrong. So I am hopeful that we may have a good vaccine later. And I can tell you that the mRNA vaccine companies are designing it. But as what you say, there are a lot of regulated loopholes. Designing it is just an overnight thing. But doing it on animals, subsequent human trials, and jumping through the regulations, at the fastest, we need another 6 months before we can get something approved. And to roll it out to the whole world, oh my gosh, it will be next winter.
So then the second question that's topmost of people's minds is this idea of mixing vaccines, and whether that could be more efficacious and more effective if you had a booster shot from a different vaccine that you took. Is there the science to back that up? Especially because we know that there are people in Singapore who are wondering whether if they got the Sinovac or Sinopharm vaccine, which uses an inactive virus, whether that could be more effective since they already had the mRNA vaccine.
I think the short answer is we don't know at this point in time. But I'd like to say that all the current vaccines that we have were directed against the spike protein of the original Wuhan virus, right? In all the various heterologous boost studies, meaning that a different vaccine is used for the boost, what they have shown is that there has been a spike in antibody levels as well. But this is similar to what you get if you use the same vaccine again for the booster dose.
So there's no downside?
At this point, I don't think there is a downside, but we are not sure that there is an upside to taking a heterologous boost.
So, Honam, actually, then answer for us. We know that the UK has actually looked and suggested mixing doses since last year, actually, when the vaccines were first launched. Why is it taking so long for this heterologous study to be done?
They were actually doing many, from AstraZeneca to Pfizer to even a vaccine called Novavax with great results in June, but till now they have not announced any regulatory approvals. Overall, I am for the idea of a heterologous boost. Theoretically, you may have some unseen advantages, but as a doctor, we have been trained not to make any introductions or recommendations unless proven in science. So that's where we are handicapped and our hands are tied behind our backs. So for the people who are a little bit adventurous, I think it's okay to go ahead with a heterologous boost. For the people who are just wants to go on the tried and tested method, then keeping the same vaccine will be fine as well.
Although that would be really up to the MOH vaccine expert panel to suggest.
Though they do allow a mix of the vaccines. Yeah.
This brings me to the last thing, which is something that you hinted at already. We know that we have a yearly flu vaccine. And it seems as if with the need for booster shots, the question is whether we would see that transpire as well. Could you talk to us about the prospects and the implications of the COVID vaccine becoming a regular scheduled occurrence?
I'm going to look at it with two scenarios. Number one, if Professor Wang Linfa's dream does come true, and we have a SARS 2003 vaccine that comes along, with that, we may not even need subsequent boosting. The SARS 2003, when you mix it with a COVID-19 vaccine, you stimulate the right antibody that will be able to match against all the similar viruses of the COVID-19 clade. So we would be able to tackle all of them because there is a genetic signature inside there that's really, really hardly unchanged and is able to tackle with it. If, however, we don't have that SARS 2003 vaccine, that means we go on back to the existing Pfizer, Moderna, J&J, AstraZeneca, or Sinovac, Sinopharm vaccine, we may need recurrent boostings. But having said that, the immunology of it is very amazingly surprising. Things change very quickly. For one, Dr. Fauci has brought it up. It seems as if we will need 3 shots of vaccines for us to have the full vaccination. And after having the 3rd shot, not only will your antibodies be more targeted against the spike protein, it will also develop much faster when you actually have an exposure to the virus. Thirdly, your T cells, which is the other arm of the immunity, besides the antibodies, will be more trained and ready to treat the viral infections. In such an individual that's properly primed with vaccinations, the COVID-19 virus literally becomes a very mild common cold. It literally takes the teeth out of the bite and it becomes just a simple bark. So what if you will still fall sick after these 3 doses, but it's just a common cold, a cough, runny nose, which no one bothered with before 2019. Then life is back to what it was, because many people will still travel on the trains, buses, work, etc. with a common cold. Then do we really need a vaccine then? Unfortunately, your question is a great question, but I'm going to come back with more unknowns. We don't exactly know how the immune system is going to react. My personal hunch, with 3 vaccines, you're going to hit it, or 3 vaccines or 2 doses with 1 infection, you might actually hit the maximal antibodies and immune response, and thereafter, the infections that occur would just be a simple common cold, which can't even hold you back from work.
Are you saying that's permanent immunity with 3 doses?
Potentially, yes.
Is that your sense too, Liang, about whether the prospects of those regular booster shots not really very likely?
I think this is something that we'll only know over time.
Oh no, so, we say that very often in this podcast.
Because that's what it is at this point in time, right? We don't know whether we will need a 4th booster, for instance, and we don't really know what is the right dosing interval at this point, even if we do need recurrent boosters in the future. Coronavirus immunology is very challenging. We do get the common cold quite often. People can get infected with other human coronaviruses about 6 months to 1.5 years after they have been infected. On the other hand, there's SARS-1, where immunity seems to be fairly long-lasting, at least 10 years. So now we don't know whether COVID-19 falls more with the human coronavirus group or the SARS group. Well, I'd just like to say one thing that Dr. Leong mentioned. When one is infected by a pathogen, one tends to build antibodies and have immune responses to many, many different parts of the pathogen. Whereas in a vaccine, you only have that immune response to that particular part of the antigen that the vaccine carries. And that's why people have found out for those infected with COVID-19, their immune responses tend to last longer than those who have been given the vaccine.
So I think we've gone the long way over this podcast to try to answer one central question. And I'm going to try to pose that question again to really try to get at it. 2 doses of the mRNA vaccines, which most Singaporeans have taken, those are enough or enough for now?
I think for the majority of the people, especially those who are young and healthy, 2 doses are enough for now. How long that for now lasts, we are not sure. For those who are elderly and those whose immune systems are compromised, then I think a booster dose will help to minimize the risk of a bad outcome if they do get infected again.
Are those your concluding thoughts as well, Hunam?
Yes, pretty much. 60 and above, immunocompromised, you need 1 booster dose. And for the rest, I think eventually a booster dose will be required. But at the time that's more opportune, at the time when science is clearer.
Well, thank you both of you. That was Dr. Leong Hunam and Dr. Su Liang on the need for booster shots and what's behind the concerns and the caveats. Now, if you appreciate Sharp Insights and what you've heard on this episode, remember to sign up for CNA's commentary newsletter on cna.asia for our best reads and podcasts each Friday. And if you don't want to miss an episode, remember to subscribe to Heart of the Matter on Me Listen, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your fix. We'll be taking a break and we'll be back shortly in October. This has been Heart of the Matter with me, Lin Su Ling, Crispina Robert, our podcast editor, and Erin Lo, our research writer.